I don't know if any of you watched on live stream last week, but I got a picture from Betsy Powell, who does our flowers back here. And in the live stream, it's like these are erupting off of my back. She said, either you look like an emerging angel or a turkey. I think it's probably the turkey. But this Sunday is a little unique because Southside Church of Christ is an incorporated business with the Commonwealth of Kentucky. We're required to host a public business meeting annually sometime in the first quarter of the year. And that may not sound very exciting, nor does it sound to me like the best use of our time together. So we're going to meet our state requirement and hopefully have an interesting Bible study at the same time. You've heard me say this before. The end of December, the last few weeks of December, and the first 2 weeks of January, that's some of my favorite times of the year, because that's when I have the opportunity to generate receipts to acknowledge your donations over the year. So every individual donation of $250 or more needs to receive a receipt from us. I'm about the only person who sees this information. So I have a front row seat to witness the generosity of our Southside family every week. And I try to describe with words to different people over the years how I feel about seeing what I see in a front row seat. And there's just really not words. I mean, overwhelming, inspiring, powerful. I just can't seem to find words that are adequate. What we're able to do for a church our size is not normal. To have 5 full-time staff and 2 part-time staff, and then to have no debt, and a 3-year-old building behind us, it's amazing. And about a year of contingency fund in the bank in case, you know, the economy tanks, we don't have to let people go or anything. We're way out of the norm. And all this is possible due to your generosity. Here's a brief summary of what we've experienced financially in 2020. We budgeted to spend $818,000. We actually spent $812,000, but we collected from donations $951,000. And those are very healthy numbers, especially with everything that we have endured the last 12 months. For 2021, we have a budget which is going to be $60,000 more than this year. And when you add in the staff support, the total would be $875,000. But it's still about $75,000 less than our 2020 level of donations. I'd like you to notice a couple of details in the 2021 budget. They're available on the table on your way out and also in the gathering place if you want to pick one up. We have committed $42,750 to the spiritual development of our college students, our youth ministry, and our children's ministry. In addition to that $42,000, we also typically makes a pretty good amount of money on our parking lot for football games. Not so much this year, since there weren't many fans. But typically, that's a pretty good chunk of change that goes to youth ministry and campus ministry, and sometimes missions get some of that. And then we also have a Solid Rock Cafe. So that adds about $25,000 to $30,000 a year. So, you know, really, when we talk about our young people, we're spending close to $70,000 in those three kind of age brackets. This year in 2021, missions will have $110,200 to invest primarily. They primarily do that into Nigeria, Croatia, the Philippines, and what's the other one? Yes, thank you. Chile. Forgot about that. Our missions team is hoping to have people in the air a little later this year to go support some of these missionaries in person. Our local outreach, which is primarily to support Habitat for Humanity, we donate about just under $10,000 to Habitat to help build a house for somebody. You add in our caring and sharing ministry, and that combines for about $56,600. This total includes a new partnership that we're excited about with Bluegrass Urban Connection. This is a ministry that's associated, a spinoff kind of a Bluegrass Christian camp, which pays special attention to students who are at risk in our school system, our local school system. Michael Fan is leading the way, and Michael would love to talk to you about that if you just want to pull him aside sometime. He has been given some very unique and crucial open doors into some specific schools into our county that there's no doubt that God has helped make that happen. This doesn't just happen for men like Michael to do this. And we hope to see several opportunities arise for some of you to help, to be able to plug in and be involved in this outreach. And so I'm thinking that more details will follow as they present themselves. You remember several months ago, we presented to you the reality that we received $15,000 from this R.W. Comer Trust Fund. And so we didn't need that money, so we started this Comer Initiative deal. So far, we have distributed $9,000 of that total. We have $6,000 remaining, and that $9,000 includes about six different projects. And all of these projects have been really cool. They've targeted underserved communities of people in and around here, and it's been fun to see some of the creative ways that you all have used these funds. We have a video ready for you this morning. It's a little less than 2 minutes, but here's our latest video, a project that Elaine Landry works with a group who makes quilts, and so I wanted you to watch this.
This all started a few years ago when the Southside ladies retired their quilting group, but my mom continued making quilts, and she needed a place to deliver them. So I was talking to my friend Bud at work, and he had met the cleaning ladies who were refugees from Africa, and they were looking for some quilts for their families, so we delivered a set of quilts to them, and of course they were happy about it. Then Bud told me that Good Shepherd had a group of quilting ladies, and he gave me the name and phone number of the lady in charge of their group, and so I gave that information to my mom, and she got in touch with their quilting lady, and she's been making quilts for them ever since, and I'm sure she can give you more information about how she goes about making quilts for Good Shepherd.
This emblem is what the Cross Quilt Group uses to identify all its quilts. And here on the back is the prayer that goes on every quilt. All of the quilts stay in Fayette County. And I have a photograph here of some of the people who got the quilts. The city owns three houses where they furnish residents for people with mental health issues who otherwise might be living on the street. And the quilt group gave them 22 quilts in December. This is what I used my Comer Initiative money for. It is 25-yard roll of quilt batting. And I expected to make approximately 20 quilts. I've made 10 so far from it. I really appreciate having this support, and I know that the other ladies in the quilt group do also. So thank you very much, and I look forward to this keeping me busy.
That's awesome. A little homespun video. I love that. One of the things we had to edit out is a little bit long at first, but of those 22 quilts that Elaine said they'd given out this year, she's made half of those, I think. So she's been a busy little beaver there in her apartment. That's awesome. We still have a few more videos kind of in the works that we'll get to share with you here pretty soon. So, you know, we have some money left. If you have a project in mind, you know, pull together some people, fill out the form online. It's under the Ministries tab under the bottom. It says Comer Initiative and all the paperwork's there and kind of the guidelines. So let us know. But this is all really, really good news. And I want to thank you for helping us to make this happen. And especially on behalf of the staff, thank you for providing us with financial resources to live and do this with you all, to do life and do ministry with you all. We're thankful to be part of this family and this ministry. Okay, that's our business meeting. Wasn't that fun? It's good stuff. Good stuff. So instead of a sermon this morning, I'd like to think of this more like a Bible study. And I want to share with you a few ideas which have been bouncing around in my head. I've also shared these ideas with a few others. And I want to say this up front. What I have planned to say this morning is not definitive. What we talked about last week, I mean, that's definitive stuff in the last few weeks about Satan and truth. What I'm talking about today is not a hill that I'm ready to die on. It's more like thoughts I'd like you to consider. And I'd be interested to know what you think about it. So let's start here. This is a definitive statement, by the way, that kind of overshadows everything we're going to talk about. The statement is that God owns it all. God owns it all. Everything we possess, everything we earn, everything we share, everything we hoard, God owns it. He owns all of it. The $950,000 we gave to this church this past year, that was his money that we gave. Sometimes we find ourselves wrestling with how much money we're going to give back to God. The better and more accurate question is, how much of God's money are we going to keep for ourselves? That's our starting place for this Bible study. God owns it all. Psalm 24, verse 1. The earth is the Lord's and everything in it, the world and all who live in it, for he founded it upon the seas and he established it upon the waters. Here's an interesting number I want you to think about. 67 trillion. $67 trillion will be transferred from our oldest generation to the next generation by the year 2061, based on research from the Center on Wealth and Philanthropy. This is people in their 40s end up passing on their life savings to their children. This is how much money, which is predicted, that will still be in an account after people in this age range die. And since it's still in our account, and since we didn't spend it for our time together, let's just refer to that as excess wealth. You might call it something else, but the idea is that we didn't need it. That's why it's still sitting there. And here's a question for you to ponder. Can we say with confidence that we believe God's intended purpose for this excess wealth is to be handed off to the next generation? Some of you may have a totally different goal. You would like to bounce your last check. That'd be kind of fun to do. Leaving something behind isn't really in your plan. The problem is, what's the problem with that? You know when your last check is. You know, we don't have like a expiration date stamped on us anywhere, unfortunately, or maybe fortunately. But that's just not really the way it works. So let me say this again. This isn't a hill I'm willing to die on, but it is something I've been thinking about lately. And maybe it's been on my mind since I fell off the roof and could have easily died. I don't know. I'm amazed at how many people, all of you know, who have died falling off a ladder. And thank you for telling me every one of those stories. That was very encouraging, inspiring. I appreciate that. I also turned 60 last month. And that sounds like a really big number. And never in my life have I thought about life as a 60-year-old. I don't know. I never planned for this. So I've been thinking about inheritance, with all of that coming together. And it's kind of an odd topic for me to think about because I've never inherited much of anything tangible. I can say I've never given a moment's thought to inheriting money or land or a business. I have, however, thought about what I'd like to pass down to our kids. So that's what I want you to think about for a bit this morning. Either what you might receive as an inheritance or what you might leave as an inheritance. Based on research and a little bit of extrapolation, of the $67 trillion transferred by 2061, about $5 trillion is in the hands of committed evangelical Christians, not just churchgoers, committed Jesus followers. God has entrusted an unprecedented amount of wealth to his people, in far excess of what many of us will consume in our lifetime. I think it's safe to say that generally, most everyone's collective wealth transfer plan is to divide it equally among their children, their kids. And we may not think thoroughly about the potential impact which might occur when the next generation is possibly handed enough money to stop working, start playing, and indulge. Remember, God what? He owns it all. And it's his money some will be handing off, and it's his money some will be receiving. And with that kind of thought in mind, I have two things that kind of rise to the top. One is this. Just because we can pass an estate of some significance down to our adult children doesn't mean we should. It could be the very best decision, but it's worth thinking about. And I wonder what God has to say about this opportunity. It seems to me like it's really his decision, since it's all his money anyway. The second thought I have is this. From what I read, every generation is less committed to God's church and less generous than the one before it. That same could be said about God's church as well, which needs to be taken into consideration that the church as a whole is less committed to the kingdom causes than the generation prior to it. My generation is less generous than my parents' generation. The generation after me is less generous than mine. So as I talk through some of this, please know that I'm talking about the big picture, not necessarily just our Southside family here. We are, in fact, a bit of an anomaly when it comes to giving, as I just shared a little bit ago, which is why I think we could be an anomaly when it comes to how we handle inheritance. And Southside is a very generous church, which makes it easier to offer these ideas to consider. If we were struggling financially to stay afloat, I would not be going down this road with you today. It wouldn't be appropriate. Overall, giving trends to churches, giving is trending downward when it comes to churches. In fact, giving on the whole among Jesus' followers has been decreasing for years. Donations to churches are on course to drop 70% within 25 to 30 years. This includes small rural churches, mid-sized urban churches, large suburban churches, across the board, all church brands. It also includes parachurch ministries. The decrease in donations will result in fewer available resources for kingdom work. Many churches will possibly have a hard time keeping their doors open. And though this is a tough number to nail down, even today we're seeing anywhere from 4,000 or more churches closing their doors annually. The small country church is on its way to becoming a relic. Will handing off $5 trillion to the next generation reverse this trend? And should this be a trend that's even on our radar? Proverbs 13:22 says this: a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. I think all of us would agree that's a good thing. But the question is, how much to leave? And of what type of an inheritance to leave? Could the inheritance you leave behind for your grandkids be that you decided to help fund kingdom work for their generation? I know you may be interested in how much you want to leave your kids. Are we just as interested in how much we can infuse in the kingdom with an inheritance? If our adult kids are on board with kingdom work and priorities, then this question becomes less significant. If our adult kids are not on board, that's when the question becomes a little more pertinent. So I'm going to ask you an uncomfortable question. Are you planning to pass down an equal share of your estate to one or more adult children who have demonstrated a history of poor financial decisions, irresponsible spending patterns, addictive or destructive behavior, estrangement from family, a series of broken relationships, a sense of entitlement, abandoning or rejecting Jesus and his church? God does have something to say to us about inheritance. And what he says is not so much about wealth transfer. It's usually in the context of land, which he has allocated for his people. However, by identifying a few principles in the way God deals with land, we may be able to gather some insights to guide our inheritance thoughts and plans. I picked up a few of these ideas in kind of an obscure book that I saw on a book list not too long ago. It's a book entitled Inheritolatry by James Wise. And Mr. Wise gave me a good framework to encourage more informed thinking when it comes to inheritance. So here are three ideas I'll share with you, which are gleaned from the Word of God. Inequality is permitted. Limitations are wise. Responsibility is required. My aim is to give you a few ideas to think about. Again, this is not doctrine. You may think about these principles and decide they don't apply to your situation. That's cool. If not, then let this just be a good reminder to you that God owns it all, an absolute truth for all time. Here we go. Inequality. The first one is inequality is permitted. No fair, that phrase, no fair, is the cry of an entitled heart. If you have children, you have heard this complaint, and it has usually something to do with one kid getting something their brother or sister didn't get. Or it might have to do with punishments, which they feel don't believe fits the crime. Here's something I thought about. Why did God choose Israel for his people, to be his people? Was that fair? It definitely wasn't equal. I mean, did other people groups think that was unfair? Did they ever wonder, why didn't God pick us? Israel received preferential treatment over every other people group. Was it because they were better? Was it because they were less rebellious? Was it because they were more obedient, more open to God's leading? Why did Aaron's line get to be the priest? Was that equal treatment? Jonah preached and Nineveh repented. Jeremiah preached and saw hardly any positive response. That doesn't seem quite fair. One guy preaches for a small rural church for $100 a week, while another guy preaches in a suburban church and makes $100,000 a year. Is there anything fair about that? The idea that fairness equals or demands equality did not come from God. Sometimes in the Bible, inequality was regulated and even commanded. In Deuteronomy 21, we read about the double portion. The principle of the double portion says the firstborn son gets twice the inheritance as the other sons. Clearly not equal. Daughters are not getting anything. The only condition to get the double portion is to be born first, to be a male. You might be a terrible person, a no good cheat, a womanizer. It doesn't matter. You still get the double portion if you were the firstborn male. Here's another situation to consider. In Numbers 26, God instructed Moses to take the size of the family into consideration regarding land allocation. Verse 52, the Lord said to Moses, the land is to be allocated to them as an inheritance based on the number of names in the family. To a larger group, give larger inheritance, and to a smaller group, a smaller one. Each is to receive its inheritance according to the number of those listed. So just because one tribe is bigger than the other, should they get more? Is that fair? I mean, is this a fertility contest? You may have had a grandmother or have a grandmother still who made sure the value of every Christmas gift given to her grandchildren was equal. So for Christmas, you receive a basketball and $3.82, you know, just to make things equal. God ain't like grandma. He felt zero obligation to equalize the distribution in Canaan, and no one complained about what they inherited. Here's a possible application. But I want to be cautious about taking a part of Scripture written in one context and applying it to a different context. So I'm going to tread lightly as we think about applying this idea of inequality to our topic of inheritance. Your adult child who has decided to remain single will have an entirely different financial situation than their married sibling with five kids. Adult children are all in different circumstances from one another. They have different levels of income. The family size is different. Maybe the needs among the children are different. Maybe one family has a special needs child or a child with costly medical bills, issues. Maybe one child has decided to work in the family business. Wouldn't it be reasonable to consider these factors when planning your inheritance? One biblical principle God has modeled, which might be helpful to us, is to realize that inequality is permitted. Number two, limitations are wise and prudent. And remember, God owns it all, right? So as we are thinking about an inheritance, our decisions may contradict this truth, not through a blatant act of arrogance, but most likely it's just not something we've given much thought to. The land God gave Israel wasn't all that huge, especially for a God who owns it all. Why did God put such limits on the land of this inheritance? In Exodus 22, this was the decision God made intentionally to limit the inheritance. He says in verse 31, I will establish the borders. I'm going to limit the inheritance. I'm going to establish the borders from the Red Sea to the Sea of the Philistines and from the desert to the river. I will hand over to you the people who live in the land, and you will drive them out before you. God limited his inheritance at three different levels. One, he set national boundaries, Exodus 23. Next, he set tribal boundaries, which we just read about in Numbers 26. All the tribes were spread across a limited geographic area. And finally, within those tribal boundaries, each family received a limited allotment. Again, the total amount of inherited land, the land that was gifted to God's people, reflected only a relatively small portion of what God could have given them. Let's take a look at this map. This is the part of the world we're talking about. For perspective, here's Italy up here, and it's going to be red in a second. There you are, blue in a second. To the east is the land where most of the biblical events occurred. Okay, we're going to zoom in on the Middle East. And this green area shows where the vast majority of the people lived. And here are the main bodies of water. You have the Mediterranean Sea, the Red Sea, and the Persian Gulf. So most people lived along the Mediterranean coast and then in the Mesopotamian Valley. At the time when God parceled out the land to the Israelites, that's where the main people group lived. The Egyptians, the Hittites, Assyrians, Babylonians. This is the portion of the land over here that's blue that was divided among the tribes of Israel. Not a very large portion compared to all the land that God could have given. So this map, this next map, lets us see how the land was divided among the different tribes. You got 11 of those, or 10 of those really, with Simeon having that little dot of a city instead of a space, you know, like the rest of them. So you can see the land God gave Israel is only a small portion of what they're given. He could have done something like this instead. He could have given Gad, Reuben, Judah, and Benjamin all of the land along the Mediterranean Sea. And then he could have dropped in all these other tribes along the along Mesopotamia that way. And we don't want to forget about Simeon. You know, could have dropped them in there somewhere. The point is, the land God could have given Israel is vastly more massive than the land he did give Israel. And there could be many reasons God chose to limit the amount of land he gave to Israel. But here's one of those reasons, which rises to the top in my mind. It's in Deuteronomy 6, verse 10 and 11. When the Lord your God brings you into a land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you, a land with large, flourishing cities you do not build, houses filled with good things you do not provide, wells you did not dig, and vineyards you didn't plant, then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not, what? Forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You see, an inherent danger lurks in an inheritance. And God nailed that danger down right here. The risk is setting someone up to be ungrateful, to feel entitled, to take a certain lifestyle for granted, to hand something of great value which they didn't work for, they didn't sweat over, there was no sacrifice to them. It's so easy to lose sight of the value of the gift and the generosity of the giver, as well as the heart from which the gift flowed, which is exactly the road Israel traveled, isn't it? Consider this. If someone receives an inheritance large enough to change their life, to alter how their family works and lives, maybe even freeing them from needing to work, is that a good idea? God says to me and to you, be careful about receiving something you didn't have anything to do with receiving. Israel won the lottery, and then they fell apart. And I'm sure you've read about current day lottery winners. Too many don't end well. We weren't designed to not work. We weren't designed to sit back and be given a treasure chest to live off of. Solomon had that lottery experience, and it didn't seem to go so well for him. His conclusion was, all of us is chasing after the wind. Working to provide for a family, teaching children about financial management, living within your level of income, those are experiences which build character, integrity, and trust, a healthy work ethic, and creativity. If I could pay people to work on my house without regard to cost, I would have missed out on a lot of fun, and I would have learned a lot less. I also would have had fewer stitches and less electrical shock. But I learned how not to do some things along the way, and that's pretty valuable. We need to give some careful thought to handing over so much that it can potentially change a person. Wisdom may call for a limit to an inheritance amount simply due to the lack of maturity in an adult child, or because they would tend toward an excessive lifestyle, given the opportunity. For the sake of stewardship, we need to ask this question: can my daughter, can my son handle this gift responsibly? And more importantly, will they honor God with this money, with his money? Maybe we start at the wrong place. Instead of thinking this is our money to distribute, maybe we would be better off to start with an understanding that 100% of our estate belongs to God. We will possibly die with a portion which we didn't consume in our lifetime, and that portion is truly in excess. Instead of asking God how much money we can justify to give to kingdom purposes, to the church, to the spread of the gospel, maybe we should be asking how much we can justify giving to our adult children. And God has modeled this principle for good reason. Limitations are wise and prudent. The last idea to consider is this: responsibility is required. God seems to take this principle very seriously. I want to take a look at Ezra 10. In this scene, Ezra is leading God's people in a time of corporate confession and repentance for their blatant disregard for God's authority. Verse 7. A proclamation was then issued throughout Judah and Jerusalem for all the exiles to assemble in Jerusalem. Anyone who failed to appear within 3 days would, what? Forfeit all his property in accordance with the decision of the officials and elders, and would himself be expelled from the assembly of the exiles. Did you catch that? If someone doesn't show up as commanded, they will lose their property. I mean, that's serious business. Responsibility is required. Check out Leviticus 18. Following a list of all kinds of activities God prohibits for his people, here's his summary statement. Verse 24, don't defile yourselves in any of these ways that he just described, because this is how the nations I'm going to drive out before you became defiled. Even the land was defiled, so I punished it for its sin, and the land vomited out its inhabitants. But you must keep my decrees and my laws. The native-born and the aliens living among you must not do any of these detestable things. For all these things were done by the people who lived in the land before you, and they became defiled. And if you defile the land, it will vomit you out as it vomited out the nations that were before you. Again, disobedience, irresponsibility leads to losing the inheritance. Look at Jeremiah 17, verse 1. Judah's sin is engraved with an iron tool inscribed with a flint point on the tablets of their hearts and on the horns of their altars. Even their children remember their altars and Asherah poles beside the spreading trees and on the high hills. My mountain and the land and your wealth and all your treasures I will give away as plunder, together with your high places, because of sin throughout your country. Through your own fault, you will lose the inheritance I gave you. I will enslave you to your enemies in a land you did not know, for you have kindled my anger, and it will burn forever. And that's exactly what happened. Irresponsibility led to a loss of inheritance. In addition to a few Old Testament references, there are also two New Testament parables that Jesus tells along the same line. Matthew 25 is the parable of the talents, and Luke 19 is the parable of the 10 minas. And both of these parables communicate a similar message. Those who are unfaithful and irresponsible will not get to keep what they've even been given. And those who are faithful will be given more. So if applied to our question about regarding inheritance, the road you could go down is very uncomfortable. Few topics are more painful to talk about than adult children who have walked away from God. There's not much I can think of that's more painful for a parent to experience. It's heartbreaking, you know? And to consider reducing or even eliminating an adult child's inheritance because they have rejected God or are living irresponsibly sounds very harsh. It may even seem fanatical. But God seems to go down that road with his adult children. How strongly does God feel about tying inheritance to responsibility and to faithfulness? And that's a question you need to seriously consider. And it seems like the fact that God owns it all encourages us to take seriously how we approach the planning and of receiving and giving an inheritance. So to sum this up, we've uncovered three principles which may challenge our typical thoughts about inheritance. First one is inequality is permitted. Second, limitations are wise and prudent. And third, responsibility is required. And then you wrap those principles around the core truth that God owns it all. Maybe receiving and giving an inheritance solely divided equally between adult children might need to be reconsidered. Just think about how much kingdom work could be done with a portion of $5 trillion to be transferred in the next 40 years. In my years here at Southside, I've seen three occasions where people have given this church a portion of their inheritance upon their passing. One we already talked about this morning, R.W. Comer, he didn't even know any of us, but he left $30 million from his business ventures. He distributed that over 2,000 churches in Kentucky and Tennessee, and everybody, all those churches, got $15,000. I mean, that's pretty incredible. That's some cool foresight on his part. A second source that we have been a benefactor of is called the Turner Foundation. We are one of three benefactors from this estate. There's about $1 million in this foundation. I honestly don't think anyone knows much about who's behind this foundation. Henry McCarley told me one time, I was asking him about it, and he had a vague memory of it, and I didn't write it down. So I don't have that information to share with you. But we typically receive about $3,000 to $6,000 a year from this fund. We send most of it, we send all of it to Whetstone Boys Ranch and to Bluegrass Christian Camp. We just kind of, whatever check I get from them, I divide it and send it to those two groups. The third occasion was really sweet. I mean, this is really sweet. Some of you remember Mary Cundiff. She used to sit right over here. Sweet, sweet lady. Love this church. She definitely did not have excess wealth. But she named us as the beneficiary of a small insurance policy. And we received that from her. She loved this church family. I mean, those are the only three times that I have seen money given to us through an inheritance. Here's one bit of data I'd like to tell you about, which you might find interesting, especially if you have a little bit of nerdiness in your DNA. You may not know this, but Dave Eberhard, he and his wife Julie are part of our Southside family. Dave works for Wycliffe, and they are in the Bible translation business. In fact, Dave has a really cool role with Wycliffe. His job is to manage the database for all the languages in the world. Wycliffe knows more about languages than any other entity in our country, in the world, I believe. 7,000 languages in that database. 3,702 of these languages do not have any scripture translated. To translate the Bible into these 3,700 languages would take about 20 years and cost somewhere between $1 and $3 billion to pay for the people to do it. That is less than 1% of the $5 trillion which will be transferred in the next 40 years. Less than 1%. You see, if we were to think about inheritance a little differently, some seemingly impossible goals might possibly be reached. My goal this morning is not to persuade anybody to bequeath funds to Southside. That is not what I'm asking at all. My goal is to help you think biblically when it comes to inheritance. And I believe it's worth thinking about. Is the generally accepted practice of handing down an inheritance fully and equally divided between our kids, will that be the best way to honor God with the excess that he has given us? Perhaps we could make a long-lasting kingdom impact if we left a portion for kingdom work, for churches, parachurches, faith-based nonprofits. Just think about it. And thanks for indulging me, with this message today. May it leave you with some principles to guide your thinking. And above all, I just want God to be honored in the way we think about all of this. So here's an invitation for you today. I invite you to embrace the truth that God owns it all. Down to the last penny, it's all his. It's all his. Anything we have, it's a gift from him. We serve a God who cannot be outgiven. He always gives his best. And that leads to the second invitation. You're invited to give because you've been given to. And not only money, but also your time, your love, your skills, and your talents. Let's stand together and sing.